Hey, y'all. This is Dr. Joy from the Therapy for Black Girls podcast. And this is a booster session. As a reminder, the information included is meant to be educational and entertaining, but is not a substitute for a relationship with a licensed mental health professional. Hey, y'all. Thanks so much for joining me for a very special bonus episode of the Therapy for Black Girls podcast. We'll jump right in after a quick word from our sponsors.
The weather's getting a little warmer, which can only mean one thing. We are just around the corner from another busy and joy-filled celebration season. You know, weddings, graduations, Mother's and Father's Day. Yep, it's that time again. And just in time to help you save for all the outfits and gifts you'll need is the Macy's Friends and Family Sale, the one you wait for. Get an extra 30% off brands that almost never go on sale, like Levi's, Calvin Klein, Tommy Hilfiger, Nike, Gap, Hotel Collection, Lego, and more. Plus, free shipping on anything over $25. April 25th to May 5th, Macy's.com and in-store.
Buying your first car can make you feel like a superstar as it's a big purchase, but it can take time to get there. Intuit is the financial platform that helps everyday people prosper. Whether you're trying to manage your money or trying to run a business, Intuit gives you the confidence to take control of your finances so you can live your best life. Intuit helps you take control of your finances through products like TurboTax, Credit Karma, QuickBooks, and MailChimp. Intuit has helped 100 million people live their best financial lives. Visit Intuit.com, I-N-T-U-I-T.com, to start living yours. Let's get into it.
Looking for hair removal tools that not only deliver smooth results, but also empower you with a sense of complete control? Enter Conair Girl Bomb, your secret weapons for smooth, sleek results made just for women. From the ultimate Girl Bomb grip and professional grade blades, you don't have to compromise and settle for less. Conair Girl Bomb equips you with the precision and power previously reserved for men's grooming tools. So take your hair removal routine to the next level with Conair Girl Bomb. Available at ConairGirlBomb.com or a retailer near you.
Hey, when the time comes to plan your next big getaway, know they got a destination idea for you. Orlando. Just think about it. The thrills at their 15 world-class theme parks, followed by awesome outdoor adventures, amazing food festivals, and top-notch dining spots. Orlando has all that and much more than you'd expect. In Orlando, anything is possible if you can imagine it. Plan your escape today and save at visitorlando.com.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Earlier this week, we chatted with Judith Sidora, a licensed marriage and family therapist in Oregon, about the mental health impact of transracial adoptions. And we wanted to follow up that conversation by hearing from someone who has lived this experience. Joining us today is Angela Tucker. Angela is an adoptee who is committed to advancing the conversation, not just having one. She is an unabashed truth teller and a gifted speaker and educator. As a Black woman adopted from foster care to a white family and growing up in a city that was demographically only 1% Black, she understands the power of life's most difficult moments. Her determination and insatiable curiosity is an inspiration to many and is on display through her search for her biological parents in the documentary Closure, and her unique upbringing has encouraged an expansive and inclusive definition of family. During our conversation, Angela shared more about her experiences as an adoptee, the challenges she's had related to identity, the process of reuniting with her biological family, and about the work she does to help other transracial adoptees. If there's something that resonates with you while enjoying our conversation, please share it with us on social media using the hashtag TBGInSession. Here's our conversation. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Angela.
Hi, I'm glad to be here.
Yes, very excited to have you here. So, you know, this whole conversation kind of started. So we are big fans of This Is Us here at Therapy for Black Girls. And so exciting, one, for you to be able to share your experience. But it also sounds like you've done some consulting work, which makes sense that this is why it feels like they've gotten the storyline right in a lot of ways, right?
Yeah.
So could you start by just telling us a little bit about your adoption story?
Yeah, I mean, I was adopted out of foster care as a one-year-old from Tennessee to Washington State. So I was adopted into a white family. My parents are white. They adopted lots of other kids as well and had one biological child. So my family was mixed in the sense that I had Black siblings, Asian siblings, white siblings, but the town that we grew up in was predominantly white, and it was actually a former sundown town. Mm-hmm. And so all the way up kind of near the Canadian border. And, you know, I grew up with a lovely upbringing and all of the opportunities that I think my birth mom wished for me. And at the same time, I grew up without knowing other Black folks. And so that really impacts my sense of self and my sense of racial identity. I grew up in a closed adoption, so I couldn't know my birth family at all until I found them in my mid-20s. And that was really difficult also, just the not knowing.
Yeah, I would imagine. And you know, you highlighted something that I think is something poignant that we saw in This Is Us as well, just this experience of this. Most recently, we've seen Randall go to like a support group, right, for other people who've experienced transracial adoptions. And so this idea of like identity formation, can you talk a little bit more about like how you've recognized maybe some of those struggles as an adult?
Oh, yeah. I mean, being with others who are transracially adopted is the place where I and so many other transracial adoptees feel like we belong, because it is a space where we inherently understand the complexities. And one of the key pieces that non-adopted folks struggle to understand is the difficulty around feeling a loyalty towards our adoptive parents and wanting to show that, like be grateful and show our gratitude, while also having to keep inside basically the struggle about the things that we've lost, most notably losing our culture, because currently society doesn't really put a huge emphasis on that piece for adoptees. It's mostly like, if you've got a new home, you have healthy, stable environment, then all is great. You know, that the thought about kind of cultural neglect is not something that people often thought of. In fact, it's often this kind of colorblind approach that parents took. And that makes for a lot of adult adoptees feel a little disconnect between our genetic identity, being Black or whatever we are, compared to our feeling identity, which for some people doesn't match. And for transracial adoptees, this is really common. So being with other people who get that inherently and know that it's a place where we can say that without having a lot of pushback is absolutely crucial.
Yeah, that's straddling both worlds. And, you know, they talked about that in an episode as well, like this gratitude that you're supposed to feel. And of course, do, right? But it doesn't negate the grief that you may experience related to the loss of your birth family.
Exactly. And the gratitude, it goes deeper too, because for so many adoptees, we know that we came with a price tag. And for so many of us who are adoptees of color, we were negotiated down because white babies cost more. And so there's this gratitude for being adopted combined with like this transactional piece where it's like we feel like we have to perform in order for us to feel like our parents got what they wanted. And that doesn't leave a lot of space to question anything at all. And this comes from the most benevolent and lovely adoptive parents, you know, like in my family where my parents were really great. So it's not a case of adoptive parents being like, don't talk about this, but it's a case of us feeling like if we talk about this, we are really going against the grain, and so much so that it's kind of scary because we fear that we might get abandoned again.
Right, of course. And you mentioned that you feel like historically, like these were not conversations that people were having around like the cultural piece, right? And making sure that that was something that was discussed in the adoption process. Do you feel like strides have been made in that process now?
Yeah, definitely. Many agencies require prospective adoptive parents to take some courses around racism and understanding that. But it's still up to the parents as to whether or not they want to embody that and really believe that or not. And so I do know a lot of lovely adoptive parents who have decided to move to different cities so that their kids didn't have to be the only kids of color. And that's really awesome. And I also credit a lot of adoption camps for the growth in this area too, that there are camps all around the country that are designed specifically for transracial families. And the focus there is for kids to see other people who look like them, and then for the parents to understand that racism is absolutely one of the key components that they have to address.
Oh, I love that. I wasn't aware that there were camps, but I could see how that could be incredibly helpful. I definitely have heard of, you know, like hairstylists and other like service providers, like working with transracial adoptee families, right? To talk about right. like how do you style like black hair and, you know, like right. those kinds of things. So it sounds like that's maybe something that happens at these camps.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it goes so much deeper than that because it's not just like a 2-hour, 4-hour hair appointment, but mm-hmm. it's a week-long immersion experience. And better yet than that is to have it in your daily life, to have representation, to see people who look like you all over the place. But for so many transracial adoptees, like that 1 week a year in the summer is what they live for.
Mm-hmm. Got it. So are there other conversations or other things that you think families should be thinking about if they are thinking about adopting a child who is different from their own culture?
Oh, yeah. Like the most important thing I think for prospective parents is to ask themselves why before they adopt. Like, why do you feel especially equipped to raise a child outside of your race? Why do you want to? You know, I think honestly, there's a savior narrative that sometimes is so subconscious and so implicit that parents don't even realize that's what's happening. But because of the culture and the history of America, that oftentimes is what is being replicated. And this feeling for some white parents that they really do have better things. In reality, it might be that they haven't faced as much oppression than the child's birth parents. And that's why they may have more materialistic things. And so if you really sit with that, then to start to think about, do we really need to break this family apart? If there isn't any neglect or abuse, if it's poverty, then perhaps we can keep the family together. So I think prospective families have a lot of thinking and hopefully hard conversations that they have with themselves before choosing to adopt a kid of color.
Yeah, you know, Angela, I think that's a really important point, you know, because I think if there's anything, and I don't know that this is anything we didn't know before the last year, but definitely within this last year, I think it is even clearer how so many white people, they're just oblivious to like things like privilege and, you know, like the idea that they could be acting out some of this saviorism, right? And so, you know, there really does need to be a very deep digging around like, I love that question. Like, why do I feel like I am especially equipped to raise this child from a different culture?
Right. And I think it's pretty striking. One of the short films that I created featured a Black adoptive dad who was adopting a Black boy from foster care. And I asked him if he would ever consider adopting a white child. And he was kind of befuddled. Like, why would I do that? I know nothing about white culture, whiteness, how to live. You know, he lives in a predominantly Black area. And I juxtapose that with the answer I get from white parents about adopting a kid of color. And their response is, oh, of course. Yeah, I would love to. You know, and it's just like, that is fascinating to me.
Yeah, I think it kind of goes with this whole idea of we're all just a human race, right? And, you know, like I can love the kid and, you know, like, of course, there are some things that you can give the kid, but there are other things, you know, because of the difference in cultural lens that you are not even aware that you can't provide in the same way.
Right. And one example that I give a lot is this example I give to white adoptive parents of Black or brown kids is one of my mentees. I do a lot of mentoring of adoptees, youth and adults, but there was one 13-year-old Black girl who, after George Floyd died, she was with a friend and they were talking about going shopping, and that friend is a Black girl and that Black girl is not adopted. So her Black parents were telling her friend, when you go to the store, you cannot put the receipt in your bag, hold it out, keep it in your hand until you walk through that door and you're like, can't even see the store anymore. And he was talking really firm to her, had like this fervor, passion. And so my mentee went home to her white parents and was like, hey, you know, my friend's dad said this to her. How come you've never told me this? Or is this important for me to do as well? And her parents started crying and said, like, I am so sorry that you're going to have to deal with racism in this way. And they were just very tearful. And so my mentee then came to me and was like, what else aren't they telling me? You know, what else do I need to know about being a Black woman in the world that I'm not getting? Because, you know, her parents were very aware, but it was just that they didn't have the lived experience to like imbue it in the same way that her friend's dad did. Mm-hmm. I thought that was like such a clear example of one of the points of tension, because it's not that my mentee's parents aren't great. They're wonderful.
Right. But they're just those pieces that are missed.
Yep.
Yeah.
Those crucial pieces. I mean, it's so important, right?
Right, right. More from Angela right after the break.
Supporting brands that support larger causes like STEM education for girls and resources for HBCUs is important to me. Macy's has been a longtime supporter of these causes and so many more, including efforts to shop sustainably. They carry pieces from brands like Carter's Little Planet, Oak, On 34th, Elemis, and more. Plus, to help bring more parks to more people, Macy's is supporting Trust for Public Lands Community Schoolyards Project, transforming vacant schoolyards into green spaces to help ensure healthy, livable communities for generations to come. For more information about these initiatives, or to show your support, donate online or in-store and learn more at macys.com/purpose. Growing up watching media legends like Gwen Ifill and Robin Roberts always gave me the security that stories that matter to me would be told. The next generation of influential Black voices can be found on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. In the Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now, they are the story. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get podcasts. Many people feel anxious when they think about finances. It can feel overwhelming, stressful, and even hopeless, especially when you're first starting out and don't know what to do. But when you have a solid financial plan in place, this anxiety turns into confidence. You can regain a sense of control over your life and improve your self-esteem. How do you build financial confidence? Intuit is the financial platform that helps everyday people prosper. Whether you're trying to manage your money or trying to run a business, Intuit gives you the confidence to take control of your finances so you can live your best life. Intuit helps you take control of your finances through products like TurboTax, Credit Karma, QuickBooks, and MailChimp. Intuit has helped 100 million people live their best financial lives. Visit Intuit.com, I-N-T-U-I-T.com, to start living yours. Let's get into it.
It's never too early to plan for your next trip. And if you're looking for a new place to visit, consider Provincetown. If you like glamour, dining, dancing, entertainment, hiking, biking, beaches, and an overall unique experience, you will find it all in Provincetown. The city prides itself on being welcoming to everyone and embracing diversity. And as the birthplace of modern American theater, P-Town is an abundance of entertainment, drag, comedy, live bands, burlesque, traditional theater, and much more. You can tour the dunes, blaze the bike trails, and walk the beaches of the National Seashore. And don't forget to catch a wave on a whale watch. For more info and to get started planning your visit, go to ptowntourism.com, the official guide to Provincetown. That's ptowntourism.com.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it on. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
Angela, I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit more. So you've talked about like the identity piece that can definitely, you know, kind of show up in childhood and in adulthood. Are there other mental health struggles that maybe you've experienced or in your work with like mentees and in doing the work that you've done that you've kind of seen come up over and over again?
The big one is adoptees not feeling comfortable to express the sadness about losing their first family. And there's like this ambiguous loss. So ambiguous loss is like, you know, someone is not physically present, but there is a psychological presence.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a tough one for adoptees to speak about because it doesn't make sense to people. Like, why do you miss somebody you never knew? Why do you miss somebody who was terrible to you? And so how do you talk about that? I know that the prevailing notion, this fairy tale narrative of adoption is so strong. That is what gets pushed down and suppressed by adoptees. And that's why the American Academy of the Psychological Association said that 1 out of 4 adoptees who seek therapy attempt suicide. There are really high suicide rates in adoption, and these adoptees aren't coming from bad adoptive families. They're just coming from places where they haven't had space to be honest. And even therapists sometimes meet adoptees with statements like, "That's so cool you were adopted." And just that is enough to shut us down.
Wow, I wasn't aware of that. Thank you for sharing that, Angela. Yeah, I mean, because, you know, it is almost as if we are not giving space for the entirety of the conversation, right? Like the duality of it. Like,
exactly.
Yes, I can, like we talked about, right? Like I can be grateful that I have this experience, but also feel deeply saddened that I did not have this other experience. I mean, and especially
yes.
Depending on the details of the adoption, you know, like if it was a family that they were a part of for a long time, you know, then there is a huge grief there of losing
right.
that family.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's why I was really excited to consult with the writers of This Is Us for Randall, because I haven't seen very many accurate portrayals of adoptees in the media and entertainment. And most of the time we hear from the adoptive parents' perspective, like how long it took for them to get through the adoption process or how much they've always wanted a baby or, you know, that's a really common thing for us to hear, but not so much the other side of the coin. And so I'm thrilled that mass media is starting to catch up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I would imagine that you were involved also with the storyline of him being able to go to his birth mom's home, right? Like we talked about that on the podcast. What an incredibly beautiful experience, I think, all around to be able to talk about like that deep sense of sadness that he didn't even really know was there until he was able to go to his birth mom's home.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, there are some deep feelings when we are severed from our roots. And therapy, especially working with adoption competent therapists, is just really helpful for us to expand our vocabulary around adoption. I think that's one of the things that I've seen is most beneficial from the youth that I mentor is like putting words to these experiences that go beyond kind of what we're told. You know, like some of my mentees knew that their birth parent chose adoption, for example, but they didn't know anything further than that. So to talk together about like, what does it mean for someone to choose this? And what point in their life did they have to get to need to make this choice? And then starting to think about political ramifications and like history between different continents, even like Korean adoptees, thinking about the Korean War and what that meant, or Chinese adoptees thinking about the one child policy and how that impacted their need to be adopted. And all of these things need to come into the conversation, and they hadn't yet.
Right. And so it definitely feels like that is why your work has been so relevant, is to be able to bring light to all of these conversations that have really been missed.
Exactly. Yeah. Missed. And I think there's a fear. Mm. I think there's a lot of fear from adoptive parents about getting too far into the truth, that it might be too hurtful for us to hear or understand, when in reality, once we have our truth, at least we have something to work with, as opposed to just being in our heads and fantasizing and wondering. And that was like Randall's ghost kingdom, right? Mm-hmm. Like my ghost kingdom was Magic Johnson was my birth dad, because he has a humongous smile and he plays basketball. I do both of those things. And then Halle Berry was my birth mom, just because she's gorgeous. And I like, why not, you know?
Right.
And so that was what I thought of my whole life. And I knew both of them were not my birth parents, but I had to fill in the void somehow. But what I really wanted was the truth.
Yeah.
Once I got the truth, once I met my birth mom and my birth dad, like, they are just 10,000 times better than Magic Johnson or Halle Berry.
I love it. Can you remember, Angela, like how that played out for you in childhood? I mean, because at some point you were not old enough to have the language, of course, that you have now. But do you remember like how you navigated that as a much younger person?
Yeah, I think it was things like all my traits. Like I would just be like, I'm so athletic. Where'd I get this from?
Mm-hmm.
You know, or sometimes not even stated, but my sister, who's my parents' biological daughter, has beautiful blue eyes, just like my dad's beautiful blue eyes. And everybody would comment on them. And so just hearing that, I didn't even say anything, but I know I felt a loss of like, yeah, I wish somebody could say that about me. I longed for that. So I think through those sorts of things, or my parents too, would really lovingly help me think too about my birth parents. When I would play the piano, they might say like, I wonder if there's any musicians in your family. You know, that was really an awesome way for me to know it was okay to think about them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that they kind of created a space for you to wonder as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right, right. So can you talk a little bit about the process of reconnecting with your biological family?
Yeah, that was pretty wild. I found my birth mother because there are some laws that don't allow adoptees to search until we're either 18 or 21. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I just had to wait. And then when I was able, I contacted the state of Tennessee to try to get my original birth certificate, because adoptees get amended birth certificates. So the one that I had my whole life said that my adoptive parents gave birth to me. That's all we get. And the real one is locked away, and it has my biological parents' names on it. And so I've always wanted that document, because then that would let me get somewhere. And so I applied for that, and then eventually found my birth dad first, because he has a pretty unique name. His name is Oterius. And through a lot of internet sleuthing and stalking, we found only 4 people in the state of Tennessee with the name Oterius. And there was one in the city of Chattanooga where I was born. So we thought that's probably him. So essentially my family, we just jumped on a plane and went up to him, and he had no idea that he even had a child, but we look exactly the same. And so it was pretty undeniable. And then he took me to my birth mother, who said, I don't know who you are, please leave. And so she rejected me. And a year later, she reached out and said, yeah, actually, I am your birth mom. I just needed to get some stuff in order, because nobody knew I was pregnant with you, and I needed to start telling people. And then at that point, she invited me and my whole family back. And we've been able to build a relationship since then. And I've been able to meet my birth siblings and aunts and uncles and cousins. And it's pretty wild. It's pretty overwhelming.
Yeah, I can imagine. And it sounds like your family was involved with you meeting your birth family.
Yeah, thank goodness. Mm-hmm. Thank goodness. I mean, I hear a lot of adoptive parents who aren't sure if their kids want them on that journey. And for me, it was essential. Like, I don't think I could have done it without the support of my adoptive parents. Like, my mom, when I met my birth mom for the second time after she admitted that she was my birth mom, I was like clenching my mom's hand so hard. It was just really scary, isn't the right word, but it was just a lot. I needed her with me. So that was, it was really exciting. I also felt like I knew that they had always expressed an interest in my birth family. So to hear my mom basically say like that she was as excited as I was to meet my birth mom just really made me feel loved. So seeing them together is just one of the happiest things. Anytime it happens, I love it so much.
Yeah, I'm wondering, Angela, if you can offer some suggestions for people who are listening who may be thinking about starting that process, or even parents listening who have adopted children and are wondering like, oh, are they going to ask me this question? Anything that you would offer?
I mean, I think the biggest thing is to listen to the voices of adult adoptees who are speaking out on Instagram, on Twitter, and to really believe what they are saying. I think there's a tendency to be like, oh, that adoptee just had a bad experience. And in reality, like all of our experiences are valid and valued. Mm-hmm. And so I really can't recommend that highly enough. And the other thing I think is that we as adoptees probably aren't going to just come up to you and say, hey, I want to talk about my adoption. Adoptive parents need to create that space by bringing up adoption all the time in ways that become so normal. Kind of like what I said around the athleticism, you know, like it can be as quick as just one quick sentence, like, wow, you're really good at basketball. Someone in your birth family must also play. Like just a quick sentence like that is letting the kid know, okay, you're not scared of this. We can talk about it. That is going to be much more effective than saying like, I'm just going to wait until they bring it up, because we're not going to.
Yeah. Make it talkable.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in one of the Adopting Next Door podcast interviews, you mentioned filling out a medical history form and just simply crossing the whole section out. I'm wondering if you can share some other overlooked ways that this othering experience happens for adoptees.
Oh my gosh, like yesterday is a perfect example. It was Mother's Day yesterday. Uh-huh. And for a lot of us, we have a lot of mothers, foster mom, birth mom, adoptive mom, and so, like, wouldn't it be nice sometime when Hallmark cards accept that and, like, have cards for us, too? That, and then a lot of school assignments, like, do your family tree or bring in a baby photo. Those things happen a lot to my mentees. They talk about being so frustrated because they're like, I think I'm just going to do my dad's Irish side of his family tree, or adoptees who maybe were in orphanages and don't have any baby pictures. And they're like, what do I do? I think I'm going to skip school. You know, it's just hard to know that you belong.
Yeah.
When you can't do some of these assignments kind of thing. I think those are some of the things that come to mind right away.
More from my conversation with Angela after the break.
Shopping for my mom for Mother's Day when she already has so many things she loves is quite the challenge. Do I go with a new piece of jewelry, maybe new comfy PJs, or a new item for her kitchen? Thankfully, Macy's has handy gift guides to make the process a little easier. You can use the gift guide to shop by price point, category, and there are even lists to help further steer you in the right direction, like a list for moms who already have everything, for grandma, and gifts that are already wrapped and ready to go. If you need a little quick inspiration, some of the hot items this year are new perfumes from Dolce & Gabbana, crossbody bags from Coach, and Dutch ovens from Le Creuset. So make your shopping a little easier this year and shop at Macy's.com/giftfinder. Many people feel anxious when they think about finances. It can feel overwhelming, stressful, and even hopeless, especially when you're first starting out and don't know what to do. But when you have a solid financial plan in place, this anxiety turns into confidence. You can regain a sense of control over your life and improve your self-esteem. How do you build financial confidence? Intuit is the financial platform that helps everyday people prosper. Whether you're trying to manage your money or trying to run a business, Intuit gives you the confidence to take control of your finances so you can live your best life. Intuit helps you take control of your finances through products like TurboTax, Credit Karma, QuickBooks, and MailChimp. Intuit has helped 100 million people live their best financial lives. Visit Intuit.com, I-N-T-U-I-T.com, to start living yours. Let's get into it.
It's never too early to plan for your next trip. And if you're looking for a new place to visit, consider Provincetown. If you like glamour, dining, dancing, entertainment, hiking, biking, beaches, and an overall unique experience, you will find it all in Provincetown. The city prides itself on being welcoming to everyone and embracing diversity. And as the birthplace of modern American theater, P-Town is an abundance of entertainment, drag, comedy, live bands, burlesque, traditional theater, and much more. You can tour the dunes, blaze the bike trails, and walk the beaches of the National Seashore. And don't forget to catch a wave on a whale watch. For more info and to get started planning your visit, go to ptowntourism.com, the official guide to Provincetown. That's ptowntourism.com.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it! Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
Tired of hair removal tools that just don't cut it? Conair Girl Bomb gives you smooth, flawless results while putting you firmly in control. From achieving that silky smooth skin to boosting your inner confidence, Conair Girl Bomb is all about helping you elevate your self-care game. Whether it's creating a hype playlist, throwing yourself into a hobby, or scheduling some me time, self-care is important to keeping you feeling confident and empowered. It's time to take your hair removal routine to the next level. You can trust Conair Girl Bomb to get the job done right. Conair Girl Bomb gives you the secret weapons for achieving powerful results with ease. Designed with women in mind, these tools boast the Sassy Girl Bomb Grip for unparalleled handling and precision, along with professional-grade blades to deliver results that you used to only get from men's tools. No more compromising. So, to all you incredible women out there, treat yourself to a little Conair Girl Bomb magic. Don't settle for anything less than perfection. Elevate your grooming game with Conair Girl Bomb. Available now at ConairGirlBomb.com or a retailer near you.
Do you have any suggestions for like how adults and caregivers can create those inclusive kinds of experiences?
It's pushing back against a lot of the adoption related microaggressions that occur every day. You know, that to create an expansive definition of family, I saw a lot of beautiful posts like on Instagram yesterday for Mother's Day that were very inclusive, saying there are so many different ways to mother. Happy Mother's Day to all of them, the grieving mothers, the biological mothers who can't see their kids. Like, making those public posts, I think, is slowly going to change the fabric of kind of what we think of as family. I'm really excited about that. Speaking up at every chance possible. And I think that also goes to kind of pushing back against that narrative of an adoptee being so lucky that they were adopted. You know, if we can start to peel that back, so many of these other things are going to fall suit, because teachers and the media, they're going to start thinking about this naturally. You know, that's my hope. I have found that to be true, that once I push back against kind of one big glaring thing, that it just kind of reframes people's their mind. And It's pretty soon after that they start to kind of see the world in a different way, and things that weren't very obvious before, all of a sudden are like, oh, wait, what about this? And what about that? And it's pretty fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As you were talking, I was thinking, like, you know, I wonder if some parents do this, like go and talk with the school administration or their kids' teachers in Absolutely. The beginning of the year to say, like, hey, I don't know what the curriculum looks like, but if there are any assignments like bringing in baby pictures or family trees, you may want to reconsider, because, you know, my child has this experience.
Absolutely. Or a lot of parents do that simply because of them being a transracial adoptee and having white parents pick their kids up from school. Mm-hmm. So talking to the administration beforehand so that we're not going to single out this child.
Right.
Many international adoptees have, you know, names that might be hard to pronounce. And I know a lot of adoptees who have just changed their name to be more American and kind of assimilate. And so to try to stop that, many parents have gone in and helped the teacher know how to pronounce the name right away. Mm-hmm. And man, that goes a long way so that the child can keep their birth name. Yeah.
Yeah, just so many opportunities in even small things like that to affirm people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it may seem small to us, but it actually makes a big difference to a child.
Oh, yeah. I mean, especially like the names is a big one, too. I know a few adoptees who change their names or kind of shorten their names, go by nicknames. And then when I talk to them about it, they're sad because their actual name is the only thing that their biological parent gave them. And so they feel such a connection to that name, but then feel like, I just got to let it go because nobody can pronounce it. It's really annoying that I have to correct people all the time. And that is a humongous loss.
Yeah.
One that isn't easily seen because people are like, she has a nickname, you know, it's cool.
Is there anything that I have not asked you that you're thinking, oh, I would really be upset if I didn't share this?
You know, I think a lot of folks ask me if I am anti-adoption. And I just think it's frustrating when we ask for like a binary yes, no, good, bad for something that is so inherently complex.
Right.
And so I definitely feel that we are adopting at too high of a rate, that it should be slowed down. And one reason for that is capitalism, unfortunately. And so I'm not anti or pro adoption, but I definitely think we need to be looking at ethics with every single case to make sure that it's done ethically.
Yeah. Any resources or like things that you've seen that do a good job of talking about like the ethics of adoption?
Yeah, I love PACT organization, P-A-C-T. They are based out of Northern California, and they work really hard to find Black families to adopt Black kids. And that's something that I'm not seeing from a lot of other agencies, that many other agencies have a huge number of white parents available and haven't really looked into their systems or their practices or their policies into that discrepancy and that disproportionality, and have been kind of okay with the fact that there's a lot of Black folks who informally adopt, which is great, but we also need Black and Brown parents to formally adopt. And so PACT out of Oakland is doing an awesome job of that. And they also have an incredible camp, one that I really highly recommend. And it takes place both in Tahoe, California, and then on the East Coast every summer. And they only have people of color as their counselors for the kids. They have really challenging keynote speakers for the adoptive parents. And I think they're doing it right.
Right. So Angela, I'm wondering if you can share more like some of the resources that you have found really helpful in doing some of your work.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of adoptee podcasts that I love. And like Adoptees On, which is by Haley Radke, she's a white adoptee. And, you know, it's not always transracial, but sometimes just adoptees that are same race have a harder time because it's not as visible. So I love her podcast. There are some really great books too that are, I'm trying to think of one specific one. I think it's called Outsiders Within. And it is a compilation of a bunch of transracial and international adoptees talking about their experiences, which is really great. I created this adoptee manifesto, which it was like my mantra of the things that society kind of told me as an adoptee that I couldn't do. I wrote it in the positive, like I can love more than one parent. It's not mutually exclusive. I do have the right to know my medical history, and a bunch of statements like that. And I sell that so that adoptive parents can like frame it on their kids' wall. Even before they know how to read, they can grow up with this mantra and know that it's okay. And that's been something that has been a great resource for adoptive families, just to give them language and to demonstrate their commitment to the adoptee growing up whole. So that's available on my website at angelatucker.com. Okay. And I'm so excited because I'm working on getting that translated into 6 different languages right now so that adoptees who are born in Ethiopia and maybe they speak Amharic will be able to buy it in that language, their native language, which is just a really beautiful way within their home, within their room to bring in their culture. So I'm excited about that. I also on my website have a bunch of movies that I created. My documentary about my search for my birth parents is available on Amazon Prime and Hulu. And then I've just talked a lot to transracially adopted youth and created a short web series. And so to hear from their mouths some of their experiences is irreplaceable. So I really recommend watching those.
Perfect. We'll definitely share that in the show notes. And do you have any social media handles that you'd like to share?
Sure. Yeah. You can find me on Instagram at Angie Adoptee. And then on Facebook at The Adopted Life. And those are also places where I've tried to build community so that we can have open conversations about really tricky stuff like white saviorism within adoption. And it's been a neat thing to have lots of other adoptive parents kind of commenting and writing, and we can learn from each other. So that's another resource that I think is not only a great place for that discourse, but friendships have also formed through that, which I think have been really ultimately helpful for the adoptee.
Oh, I'm sure. Thank you for sharing that. Well, I really appreciate all of this information, Angela. Thank you so much for your time today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Glad to be here.
I'm so glad Angela was able to share more about her experiences and her work with us. To learn more about her and her work, be sure to visit the show notes at therapyforblackgirls.com/atucker. And don't forget to text 2 sisters right now to encourage them to check out the episode. If you're looking for a therapist in your area, be sure to check out our therapist directory at therapyforblackgirls.com/directory. And if you want to continue digging into this topic or just be in community with other sisters, come on over and join us in the Sister Circle. It's our cozy corner of the internet designed just for Black women. You can join us at community.therapyforblackgirls.com. Thank y'all so much for joining me again this week. I look forward to continuing this conversation with you all real soon. Take good care.
Looking for hair removal tools that not only deliver smooth results, but also empower you with a sense of complete control? Enter Conair Girl Bomb, your secret weapons for smooth, sleek results made just for women. From the ultimate Girl Bomb grip and professional grade blades, you don't have to compromise and settle for less. Conair Girl Bomb equips you with the precision and power previously reserved for men's grooming tools. So take your hair removal routine to the next level with Conair Girl Bomb. Available at ConairGirlBomb.com or a retailer near you.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it on. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL Schedule Release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule-release to learn more.
This is Amy Brown from 4 Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
What kind of fun is waiting for you at Kings Island? The holy cow, we're way too high and here comes the drop kind of fun. The make a splash all summer kind of fun. the, I can't believe I ate that whole funnel cake, let's get another kind of fun. But most importantly, at King's Island, you'll find for the fun of it, kind of fun.
Don't wait to start your fun season. King's Island is now open on weekends.
With dozens of streaming services, box office films, and content to choose from, people are spending over 2.5 years of their lives searching for what to watch. But The Hollywood Reporter brings you THR Charts, one place for you, your family, and friends to find the most watched TV shows and movies every week. THR Charts is a guide to help you spend less time scrolling through platforms so that you can spend more time watching and binging the content everyone is talking about, all supported by data and trusted sources like Nielsen, Comscore, and Paired Analytics. Check out THR Charts on HollywoodReporter.com.